Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to listeners, old and new. I'm Graham Hunter. You can get an extra big interview plus a documentary special every month and hear all our content free of adverts by signing up as a socio at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. This month, only socios get my big interview with Sir Les Ferdinand and a documentary called Pep Talk that I put together with Jonathan Northcroft, star of Stage, Screen and the Sunday Times. For £2.99 per month, you'll also know you're supporting our show. More at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Thanks to all our socios. We need your help to do this. We couldn't and wouldn't do it without you. The epic that I remember that I wanted, that I've been desperate to bring up, is features Xavi and features Pep, because that stage I'm reporting a lot on Chelsea and you. You've had one hell of a Champions League campaign. Luca really trusts you. You're playing a lot. You've played a huge amount of Champions League football in 99-2000.
Yeah.
And you've dealt with Milan, which I suppose player of your ilk. Dealing with Milan, no big deal. Lazio, come and win at the Bridge, but you draw Barcelona.
Yeah.
And it's Louis van Gaal. It's funny how these names keep cropping up, but Louis van Gaal's Barcelona. And if I remember it correctly, I mean, it's a blitzkrieg game where Chelsea rip into a sort of fairly ragged Barcelona, who could really, really play and were full of stars, didn't dominate the ball, I don't think, as much as they do now. And if I am correct, you sacrifice almost all of the things that make you exceptional, use of the ball and time on the ball and what you might change the direction of a game, to swallow up Xavi Hernandez.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird one because it wasn't meant to be Xavi. We thought it was Guardiola, but he pulled out injured or something. But Luca felt that he was going to be fit. So anyway, when the team was announced, it was obviously I was playing. To be honest, I wasn't too surprised. As I said, I felt I deserved it the way I'd played in the league and stuff like that. But the fact that it's Barcelona, you do have to kind of pinch yourself on it. Their front three was Rivaldo, Kluivert and Figo. So yeah, outstanding. And I'd never heard of Xavi at the time. But he pulled me to one side and said, look, it's not going to be Guardiola, but the person that's playing instead of him is going to be just as good. It was like, he went, I don't know whether he knew that at the time or whether he was just trying to keep me in, you need to prepare for this guy like he's Guardiola, so like to keep me in it. But I was like, yeah, I haven't heard. He went, no, he's a Spanish under 21 international, he's class, he does exactly the same things and you need to play all the build up, the 2 days going into the game, you need to play exactly the same. And so obviously, there's one part of me, because I always loved Guardiola. As I said, the Barcelona teams that I remember watching, I always remember Baquero, little midfielder, one touches and all that. But then Guardiola was a bit after it, and I'm like, oh, I would have loved to have played against Guardiola. But you're then thinking, right, who's this Xavi fella? Yeah, little do you know, he probably surpassed Guardiola as a player. But yeah, I remember playing, I had to do a man-to-man marking job. It was literally wherever I am when we lose the ball, it was still fine on it, but wherever I am when we lose the ball, I need to just attach myself to Xavi. And he didn't play much that night, so I suppose that it was good on my point. It was a little bit weird for me. As I said, I wasn't used to playing. I've never ever done a man-to-man marking role in my life, but I think Luca had trusted me as far as that I would do it. I would think of the team more than I would think about my own game.
I love that.
And yeah, as I said, it was on a night where the lads done great as a team, and to beat Barcelona 3-1 at home for a team that's first time in the Champions League, it was a special night.
My favourite London cabbie, hello Pat Moriarty, was talking recently about having been at a corporate with Jermaine Genus, talking about when he'd been asked by Bobby Robson for Newcastle to try and do what you did for Chelsea against Barcelona. And Jermaine answered, who's the most difficult player you ever played against? And he said, Xavi Hernandez. And whoever was asking him the question said, in there, did you see much of the ball? And Jermaine said, I think I touched it 3 times all night in the game. And that was a different Xavi Hernandez. But let's just take a little tour. You've gone on to admire what he's done as a leader, as a sport. You'd pay to watch him. However good you've been as a sportsman or footballer, however you've done your career, you'd pay a ticket to go and watch Xavi Hernandez anywhere, right?
All day. For me, one of the greatest ever midfielders. Not just because he's part of the small man club, but at the same time, the team that I've watched Barcelona over the last 10, 12 years, for me, is obviously there's little changes into managers and whatever, but the team when Xavi was in the thick of it, in the middle of midfield, I think it's the best team football team I've ever seen. And to see how he would just command the ball wherever he was, he would get himself out of bother, he would control the tempo, he would open up teams, when, especially at Barcelona, when you've got 10 players behind the ball, camped on the edge of their box, he would have every club in the bag to open them up. But to play with all the top superstars continuously, and the amount of games he played for Spain, and what was it, the World Cup that they won for Spain? I thought it was outrageous.
Extraordinary, wasn't it?
It was outrageous.
He was the night you marked him out of the game, as a youngster, admittedly, but similar age to you.
Yeah.
He was playing centre midfield, what they call the pivote for Barcelona. Yeah. He was, because he stood in the number four position, Pep's position. Yeah. When Frank Rijkaard, because I spent several days out in Qatar recently going back over his career for a film, and he talked about, like, you know, he booed on at the pitch when he was substituting Guardiola. He said, it's with an ironic tone, it's funny, isn't it? You know, now I'm the great departed hero and everybody loves me. And his words, I hate the phrase, he said, I was the cancer in the club, according to everybody before. I don't know if you probably...
I never knew that.
You probably didn't buy El Mundo Deportivo the day after the Stamford Bridge game.
Really?
But the columnist said, this game showed why Xavi is not even half of Guardiola, and he was useless, and it's another example of why he's not going anywhere at the club. There's a columnist with this thing, because you suffocated him at the club, and they couldn't see. But when Frank Rijkaard, in about 2004-05, said to him, I want you to play what we might call right midfield, they called an interior, almost somewhere between a midfielder and an inside forward, Xavi was scared and said to Rijkaard, I don't think I've got that in my game. Yeah. And was intimidated by it, and freely admits it himself.
Really?
Which, looking back on his career, is extraordinary to know. But have you been faced with challenges where somebody said to you, do this, do that, or something's come your way where it's felt intimidating, or you haven't been sure if you've got that in your locker?
No, I wouldn't say my positioning was changed a little bit. And Rude sometimes used to play me in behind the striker. I never used to like that. As I said, I preferred to not be receiving long balls into me with my back to play. And, you know,
did you like to see the game?
Yeah, but not only that, I'd also think that in those areas at the top, unless you're passing it properly and keeping it for good spells, a lot of the time they're expecting the number 10 back then would be expected to run beyond strikers and get on the end of flick-ons. And I was like, that was never my game. So there was that side of it, but it was never... And Claudio, and to be fair, Luca at times as well, they played me on the side of a midfield four, but it would be, I think, usually just to shore up, have a more of a hard-working midfield and maybe one winger on one side and then more of a midfielder still just slightly tucked in on the other, and then maybe you had a fullback behind that side that was more adventurous and then would give you the width. But I wouldn't say nothing really intimidated me in that way. I mean, I wasn't really one for getting nervous. Those type of games, I remember going to I used to call it the Nou Camp, but since I've watched Spanish football and that, I've changed. Yeah, so I remember
some
going
bad
to,
bastard keeps insisting calling it the camp.
Yeah, so I remember going to Barcelona and places like that, and just thinking, this is what I wanted to play. I wanted to play football for. This is what I wouldn't get nervous about. And I remember coming in after that game, and obviously we lost 3-1 in normal time. It was the second, we lost 3-1, it went to extra time, and then they scored two against us in extra time. But playing against Guardiola there was more of a challenge to me. One, that I wasn't good enough to stop him playing, because he absolutely controlled the game, I felt, Guardiola. But at the same time, where at Stamford Bridge, it was easier for me because our team was doing well. Like, do you know what I mean? So it kind of shows you the difference in team and individual success is like, did I do anything wrong at Barcelona? No, I was actually quite happy with how I played, and I wanted to get on the ball, and I felt that I showed, when we're talking about people getting scared and that, Ray Wilkins done a speech, kind of got into the lads at half-time a little bit and said that we needed to show more balls. Like, for me, some of the older boys, international players, kind of looked like they froze a little bit, and I was kind of like thinking, come on, this is what I wanted to play for. And that's not me saying that I done great and all the rest of the lads done bad, but it just showed you that I've played with players, and I know what you mean, I've played with players that you would see certain games affect them, or you would see mistakes affect them. I was lucky enough coming through at Chelsea where they have a certain affinity with homegrown players where you are most definitely allowed more mistakes than others. And it's something that will always stick with me. As I said, I don't want to keep using Millwall as a derogatory thing, but I've watched young lads make debuts at Millwall and being booed after 10 minutes. Whereas at Chelsea, that's unheard of. I'd played many a bad game and mistake after mistake. But as long as they saw you trying your hardest and wanted to do what was right, they gave you a little bit of leeway as far as making mistakes. So I didn't, as I said, as far as being intimidating and that, I think it was more opposition that you kind of felt, can I match up to this person I'm playing with and can I get the better of him?
Well, you were matching up to the new Manchester City manager, and I was reporting on both games, paying attention, watching closely. I'd been across to Barcelona a lot as a reporter. I'd spent a lot of time with Bobby Robson. It was very, very good to me, and I understood a little bit their system, and as a reporter who'd covered Chelsea a lot, I was fascinated by, and who liked Luca, and Luca was very good to me. First Premier League manager to whom I could phone and ask things, and that's yeah. That's an enormous privilege. So I was kind of rooting for Chelsea to some degree. If I watched your performance that night with a good eye, Pep Guardiola played further and further back because you were giving him not a lot of room and not a lot of space. I remember, I'm pretty sure, first half, he took you out about just above the knee in frustration. Yeah. I remember him moving the tempo a lot and the ball came through him. I mean, yeah. Maybe even more than normal because Barcelona weren't fluent. They weren't releasing Figo and Rivaldo just as much as they normally do. I think he had probably had Cocu and Gabri around him.
Yeah.
De Boer, Puyol at the back.
Yeah.
Poor keeper in Hesp.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah. It wasn't great over legs.
Yeah, no. But all right for us, didn't he?
Up front, kind of quite tidy. But up front, I mean, of the 5-1, as you said, because if I remember correctly, you'd played a big, maybe even a cup tie, 48 hours before. You played three games in 5 days.
Yeah.
Then you're at the camp now, maybe, because people maybe think that football at Barcelona began with Pep Guardiola, the manager. Just try and describe to people, it's 100,000. What's it like arriving and going? What's the atmosphere? What's the feeling? As you come down the stairs, a little chapel on your right.
Yeah, well, it was, for me, it was when you turned up to the stadium, I was a little bit outside, a little bit disappointed, thinking, I swear it looks bigger on the telly. We trained in on the mini
yeah, in the mini stadium, yeah, right, about 500 metres away.
Yeah, yeah. So when we actually turned up to the stadium, I was thinking, oh, I don't know what it is. It looks bigger on the telly. It don't look that big. But then obviously you're not realising. Obviously the pitch is below the level that we are arriving on at the stadium, and it just showed. It was class for me. It was just like tradition. It was just sunk in tradition. And even when you're going down the tunnel and then you've got the chapel halfway down and you've got some of the boys having a little prayer and stuff, and when you come out, that's when you see the enormity of the place. It's packed, but as I said, it was even in the warm up. I was getting I wouldn't say goosebumps, but I was excited, going, oh, I just want the game to start. No footballer likes warm ups anyway. Like, it's the most annoying thing in the world.
I've no idea.
Who likes stretching and jogging about? And I like you like the warm up side of it, as in, yeah, you can get to a little kickabout, but the warm ups nowadays are a lot more quick feet and get ready, which is fine. Listen,
they're organised drills now.
You've got to do that side of it. Yeah, but yeah. I just wanted the game to start. It was kind of like, let's go. Oh, this is brilliant. The pitch was at this. This was at a time at Stamford Bridge when the pitch was
bumpy.
Not like it is now. Yeah. So yeah, I just wanted as I said, the game to start and the atmosphere, the noise and the deafening noise when we actually scored a goal and the whole place went silent because obviously we only had a couple of hundred, I think, up. In the
right up in the gods,
and you could hardly hear him. So
they could hardly see you.
Yeah, that side of it was a little bit surreal. Going, wow, that's got to be the quietest ever that we've ever scored a goal somewhere. And it was, as I said, it was just deafening. But you certainly knew you was in a special place. That compared to the San Siro, to me, was no comparison. I thought the San Siro was great, looked good, and thought the pitch was poor. And they gave Marcel a lovely...
Marcel Desailly.
Yeah, they gave him a great sort of standing ovation before the game that was great, and it was really good. They all sang together. But, you know, like, as far as atmosphere and that wasn't on the same level as the Camp Nou.
You've already found on and off, Mike, that I'm quite an excitable type. I get quite romantic about football, evangelical about football. And I remember when Pep was being successful as a coach, I was rabbiting on in broadcast, sometimes on Spanish TV in Spanish and sometimes here, about this brilliant prince of a footballer. But I remember, I'll name him now, Jordi Lardín, who was a Atletico Madrid Espanyol, Spain international, told me, "Well, I don't recognise that guy you're talking about." He said, "Pep would do anything to win. Stamp on your boot, he'd put his finger in your ear, call your mother, win. He said he was a bad bastard."
Yeah.
This is Jordi Lardín's word, and he played against Pep and with Pep too as well. Any dark arts when you went head to head with Pep?
No, I got probably just the one tackle that you mentioned. I remember thinking, blimey, I didn't know you never really saw him tackle. Well, I didn't really see him tackle in the games that I'd seen him, but I was a little bit surprised by it. But at the same time, it was like, oh, yeah, it's what you're nothing.
Getting,
yeah, exactly. But at the same time, as I said, I remember getting through the game thinking, I can't get near him. Like, I was near him as in vicinity and maybe close enough, but I just remember thinking I couldn't. There was never any really sort of second balls or little bouncy balls in and around him. Everything was just so controlled and like.
Having seen him, so I can tell you now, without having asked him what was in his, I can't get rid of this one. As you were saying, I can't get near it. Like, if you look at the goals, three set play goals, you know, a penalty, the free kick which deflects off Barbiaro. And I think there's a Pep free kick in which you can hardly be responsible for Danny, which I think maybe might look back and say I should have, when Danny's on, we maybe should have just watched how we covered him a little bit. And, you know, set play goals. The fifth goal comes from a nice little pass, but it's gone by that stage already. And I would have said that 5-1 aside and going out, that was as special a performance, or as effective a performance as you gave against Xavi, who famously said that you were his most difficult opponent.
Toughest. As I said, that when Xavi kind of elevated to astronomical levels up after a few years after that game, I remember someone pulling me at Millwall at the time and just said, "Look, there's a camera crew here. You've got to do an interview for, I think it was Xavi's 10th. Or I don't know where it was. It was a celebration of something to do with Xavi. Don't know whether it was 10
they
years.
They call it in Spain when it went out. They called it the Jordi Morris Hour.
Yeah, But I had to do an interview to then be sent just to say what it was like to play, because he'd mentioned me being in like an annoying opponent. I think that he was saying that he felt that even if he was going to the toilet, I would have followed him, which is true. This is exactly what Luca asked me to do, and as I said, it is as much as we're all footballers and we want to play the beautiful game, and I'd love for him to say, "Oh yeah, he was doing this with a ball, great passing, blah, blah, blah." But at the same time, when you've got someone of his stature mentioning you at all, as I said on camera and I spoke to someone at a Barcelona radio as well, it was the same thing. It's like, I look at him now going, do you know what I mean? He's an absolute hero. Whether he's the same age as me or not, you look at how he's played the game and you can't help but admire him so much.
Hope you enjoyed that, and I'm willing to bet you did. Finally, a reminder that you can get an extra big interview plus a documentary special every month and hear all our content free of adverts by signing up as a socio, by signing up as a member. Join us at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. We need you. For £2.99 per month, you'll also know that you're supporting this independent show that we produce and fund ourselves. There's more on this at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Thank you to all our believers, our members, our socios. We need you for this.